Polycast. I don't suppose you're a Civilization fan.
Civilization?
A computer game.
No.
Five, four, three, two, one.
All right. He can count higher than we can. Welcome to episode 21 of Polycast, the official podcast of Pulp and Civilization site. My name is Imran Siddiqui, who sounds a bit different because I have fancy new equipment. With me is Dan Q.
Wow, you sound more mature. That's kind of scary, actually. But people are going to be like, who the hell is that?
This is a new guy you got. Well, look at it this way, guys. They won't mistake you anymore.
No, that's true.
I have Makua with me as well.
Hello.
Also joining me is Kenneth Furland, also known as Impeller on the forums.
Yes, Impeller here.
And we're also supposed to be joined by Wouter Schneiders, but we know what he's up to.
A prawn.
This Civ 4 Beyond the Sword 07. And Boudica is apparently leading heavily, but I would pick Catherine myself. Boudica looks a little weird.
Well, Catherine is dressing a little more casually, like Boudica seems to like to.
Oh, no, no, no. Well, yes, okay, the cleavage probably swayed the vote, but...
Yeah, I was going to say, she's leading with something.
But I kind of like a woman in a uniform. Oh, oh. Hey, you know, Victoria got 36 votes, too, which is great.
Yeah, and she's actually ahead of Elizabeth.
I really like my quote in response. They really put the bootay in Boudica.
No.
That's even bad for our show.
Should be noted, though, that Boudica was competing most of this time on a still screenshot. She wasn't able to show off her animation.
She's
which is even more provocative than the still shot.
You haven't had a chance to see her moves yet.
Ooh. Ooh.
Moving on. There is a mod out there by Will Nine that adds pre-settler to the game, so anyone who wants to win and can't otherwise can check it out.
Well, I'll go over under him and make pre-settler level.
Actually, right now, I think he has 6 levels that are called pre-settler.
Never mind.
Pre-settler?
Pre-settler?
I think that's the general gist.
Yes, exactly. Interview segment revived. We speak with Gabriel Tavato, better known as Rye in the Civ community, about his Rise and Fall of Civilization mod and Beyond the Sword.
In the news, we'll have the first look at the preview, demo, and interview for Civilization's Revolutions, along with a gander at the other scenarios in Civilization Beyond the Sword, and lastly, discuss Apolyton's new, much more stable server, Settler 4. In the modcast, we go in search of the elusive Goody Hut, then discuss feelings on the attack and defense balance of Civilization IV, and the history interest of the Civilization IV fanbase.
In the Senate, 6 choices for what you build first in Civ 4, and is there a best or at least a better way to create great people in the game? A brief overview of an overhaul of the CCCP mod for Civ 4, BTS style.
And lastly, we'll react... to comments on episodes 19 and 20.
I'm Dan.
I'm Imran.
And I'm Mikey.
I'm Rai.
Hi, Rai. Someone can say what Rai does.
Because Imran has no clue. Maybe someday Imran will actually play your mod.
I'm a big fan. I didn't ask who you were in the pod in the forum.
That's how we found out. Wait, you ever play that?
Gabriel Tavato, Civilization fans from Civ 2, and in particular Civ 3, and now Civ 4, will likely know him better as Rai, Imran notwithstanding.
Who?
Rise and Fall of Civilization is an Earth map-based scenario that simulates the rise and fall of civilizations throughout the history of the Earth. It is the sequel to Rise of Civilization, one of the most popular mod packs ever created for Civ 3. Appleton and Polycast's very own Wouter Locutus Snyders, along with fellow staff members Dark Cloud and community member Bruce Grand Patrol Cronkite, put forth a number of possible questions to ask Rye. I selected the final 12 with a focus on rise and fall of civilization as it appears in Civilization IV Beyond the Sword. Each of us will take turns asking Rye these questions. Everyone has a copy?
Yeah, I got the list you sent me earlier.
In the correct order?
Yes, in the correct order, Rye. Jeepers. Let us begin. Rye, when did you start playing Civilization?
I started playing Civ 1 in 1992. I began modding in the year 2000 when I found out that on the web there were heaps of scenarios for Civ 2 already. And since then, I couldn't stop.
All right, question 2. Of course this falls to me. For those not familiar with it, not me, of course, what is Rise and Fall of Civilizations?
Rise and Fall of Civilization is a popular modification for Civ 4 that turns the single-player game mode into a reenacting of the history of the Earth. This means that it's a mod based on the map of the world and that it features drastic changes to the gameplay, such as Civ spawning at different times in order to achieve such goal.
Right. What are the differences between Rise and Fall in Beyond the Sword and the existing public version for Vanilla and Warlords?
The difference is just that the new version takes the new assets and concept introduced in Beyond the Sword. Unfortunately, not every Civ fit in the context, and only 5 were added as playable Civs. The excluded ones all made an appearance in some form anyway. For example, the Holy Roman Empire, as it's overlapping Germany, is not included, but Charlemagne is, as early German leader, after being renamed Otto I.
Well, that'll make a lot of Holy Roman Empire haters happy.
What, we have those?
We have a Holy Roman Empire?
So aside from the obvious custom map and goals, what are the differences between Rise and Fall and the Epic game, and to what extent does it make the use of Beyond the Sword's new features?
Rise and Fall introduces some new concepts, such as stability, flag, and embassies. All of them offer new challenges to the players and make them develop new styles of play. These new concepts are all in the BTS version too, as well as the BTS new features. Espionage, corporations, and the others have all been directly imported or slightly changed. The only bigger change was made to the new Civ split button, which gives independence to the cities rather than making them form a new vassal Civ.
A concern with Rise and Fall are its long load times. How are they in Beyond the Sword, and what should you do to combat them?
Well, since BTS version features 5 more Civs, loading times were a bigger concern. So I had to find a solution while preserving the dynamism of the mode. What I did was adding a later starting point so that the game starts playing itself since 600 AD instead of the ancient age. For modern Civs, this means that you have to wait no more than 15 minutes.
Okay. And Beyond the Sword, are there any major changes to how easy or hard it is to play with certain Civs?
Aye, there are a few differences. First of all, some colonization goals might be harder now, because there's more competition thanks to the Dutch and the Portuguese. There are a few more differences in controlling Civs like Arabia and Turkey because of the presence of the Byzantine Empire in the later start.
Where did the idea to include Rise of Fall in Beyond the Sword come from? Who approached whom and how did the process go?
Well, we tested where offered a chance to submit a document describing our proposal. I couldn't begin working on anything last year because I was too much busy with my studies and other stuff. But I had the last minute idea of submitting Rise and Fall itself last February. Having already made the mod for Vanilla and Warlords, I thought the conversion would have been an easy job. And I was wrong.
Yeah, certainly, because Beyond the Sword, I would just guesstimate is something like 4 times the amount of code difference between Vanilla and Warlords. Because I've done it myself, so messed around with the code.
How did the process of designing the mod go? Was it as frustrating to design for Beyond the Sword as it was for Vanilla Civ 4, or have things improved? Were any features left on the cutting board?
I have to admit I underrated the amount of work once again. Things get tricky when alpha releases move on and make the mods crash or malfunction until they're converted again. this process of updating consumes much time I might have dedicated to new features indeed. But in the end, I'm still happy with my choice because I had a great experience anyway.
Have you ever played the Epic game and any of the other mods and scenarios in Beyond the Sword? What do or don't you like about them?
You may believe it or not, I've played just two or three complete games of Civilization IV in the last 2 years. This last month was no exception, as I could play just half game of Final Frontier, which looks good, really good, by the way. But I've taken a look at all the scenarios, and I have to say that Age of Ice and Road to War are the best, for different reasons. I'm looking forward to play them both, as well as Final Frontier again.
I think we can understand why you haven't had the opportunity to play many games of Civ 4 from start to end in the last couple of years. So what's in store for you for the future? Can we expect updates, new versions of Rise and Fall, new projects altogether? And has Firaxis hired you yet?
No, I'm currently close to my master's degree, and this is taking away much time I would otherwise dedicate to modding. As soon as I finish, I'd like to make some experience in a great gaming software house. Nice. Possibly in Italy, or at least in the UK. Until then, I'm not planning to expand Rise and Fall further. I'd rather work on spin-offs such as Rise and Fall Multiplayer, Rise and Fall for Random Maps.
Just a quick follow-up question. What are you getting your master's degree in?
Computer engineering.
Excellent.
Good choice.
Yeah.
So what were some of the inspirations for your modding creativity?
Well, this is actually a difficult question, because I don't know. I seem to produce most of ideas when I'm busy doing something else, like studying or working, or even sleeping. Once I had the idea of adding religion to my Civ 3 mode, right in the middle of the night. Strange, isn't it?
Oh, isn't Rye nice?
Indeed he is.
He wanted to say what he was really thinking, which was he got the inspiration from me, but he didn't want the rest of you to feel badly.
If he said that, we knew he'd be lying.
Of course. Any advice you can give to other prospective modders?
I think the best advice is to try to have an original idea. If you are unable to implement it, an interesting idea may catch the attention of more experienced users who may help. Beyond the Sword, by the way, offers new content to work on. Event system looks like a great platform to develop, and I'm looking forward to see a Star Wars mod based on Final Frontier 2. I'm sure someone will do it sooner or later.
There's already a immature Star Wars mod that was being worked on for Warlords. Maybe it'll get a jump start now.
Yeah, but I think that it could now take advantage of the new Final Frontier asset.
Star Wars. Come on now. Battlestar Galactica, Star Trek, not Star Wars, please. Wait, what? Did I say that out loud?
Send all hate mail.
Or that it sort of looks like Battlestar Galactica already?
Yeah. Careful, Dan, you don't want to get force choked through the internet, you know.
Well, Ryan, thank you very much for your time to answer our question.
Thank you. Cheers.
Thank you.
First look, preview, demo, and interview for Civilization Revolution, console-based Civilization game.
You become a great leader of one of the 16 great civs of history. You're going to guide them from the Stone Age to the Space Age. And you make all the decisions for them. Do I go to war? Am I going to use diplomacy? Am I going to fire off the nuke? How am I going to research? Do I want to be more of a cultural guy? Do I want to be more of an economic guy?
From the people who brought us dinosaurs.
And some other soup, yeah.
Barry Caudill, you are with Firaxis. You're the executive producer on Sid Meier's Civilization Revolution.
That's correct.
We've seen Sid Meier's Civilization games for a long time now, and this is the very first time that the game has been developed specifically for console.
Come on now, you don't even own a console, Dan.
This is true, I don't.
Me neither.
I do.
Thank you.
I do, but it's really outdated.
It actually looks interesting, though, in terms of the screenshots on the GameSpot preview they have. Definitely console-ish, but interesting in its view, the kind of 3D-ish world.
Yeah, you can really see the curvature of the Earth there, can't you?
Yeah.
We're going to have globe view where instead of having a mini-map that takes up a lot of screen real estate, we're going to have this view where it works as your mini-map and it actually maps the whole world to this globe. And you can spin it around and look at it and see all of the units, all of the buildings, all of the cities, everything that's out there on this globe.
The reaction I got from a lot of the other beta testers was a giant collective, meh, because it's for consoles. There are going to be a lot of people who just think that it's got to be dumbed down for consoles. And you have to realize that probably is true, but what did they give up in order to do that? Did they cut out the bad parts? People had said that Civilization IV was going to be dumbed down in certain ways, but they took out parts that were really just tedium anyway, and yeah, maybe it'll be the same here.
The liberating thing for us is that Sid broke the mold. He didn't start with any existing code. He started from scratch, and he really is working on this game. He's programming in this game. And he made a new prototype that basically has little bits of everything that we like about all the Civs that have come along, but it's also accessible and inviting for new players. So we expect that these guys that are out there, they're hardcore guys, are still going to find something to like. But at the same time, we're hoping that some new guys that maybe don't play Civ or don't play on the PC are going to say, hey, I'm going to try that game.
Well, I think with console especially, you have to cut out a lot of, say, standing around stuff, for lack of a better term. I mean, you have to have something that moves at a decent pace.
One of the things we did was we sort of limited the map size a little bit, and that actually goes a long way towards keeping the game shorter because there's instant conflict because there's not as much land and the Civs are closer together, so you're going to see somebody and you're going to have to make a decision right away. When you make Civ 1, Civ 2, Civ 3, Civ 4, you're always sort of adding stuff. They don't always add to the fun of the game, so we sort of pared it down and we could treat this like Civ 1 all over again and say, what are the key texts that define civilization? We could make a game that was inviting and understandable, but also deep enough that hardcore fans would still appreciate it.
Who knows? It might end up being a really good game, just a kind of a quick Civilization type of game, and also it might help in the future making other Civ games where they realize, like, in terms of interface or in terms of just pacing on what to do with PC Civ game, which I know people are probably more willing to sit in front of for hours, but might give them some ideas.
Civ has always been sort of a game that can take you 10, 12, 18 hours play through a game. So that we definitely streamlined. We pressed it, and we wanted games to take maybe a couple hours from start to finish. And then you're going to jump back in because the Civs are different. It always feels different no matter who you're playing as or who you're playing against. The world is different. There's new things to discover.
One thing we know has been cut out, apparently from screenshots, I think I read this somewhere, is no improvements on the terrain. Did you guys read that?
Oh, I missed that.
Oh. Yeah, no placement, no pollution, no corruption, no anarchy, no worrying about the placement of specific improvements around your cities, according to the IGN preview of it.
When I read that on IGN, when it talked about there being no pollution and no corruption, I'm thinking, I guess we haven't played Civ 4 then. It made it like that was new, whereas the only thing that seemed to be different from Civ 4 and Civ Revolution was not the placement of the improvements.
Mm.
Yeah.
Controller was easy, way easier than you would expect because it's a turn-based game. It's actually waiting for you to do something. It's not like an RTS game where it's twitchy and you're trying to get all this control in there. The elegant nature of the game is that at any given time, a unit or whatever is active, your city or your unit or whatever it is, there's only really a couple things that you can do. It actually maps really well, and it's really comfortable. It's great to just sit back on the couch and kind of rule the world from an easy chair.
The bonuses are more extreme in Civilization Revolutions, which is unique abilities of each Civ are going to be more significant than the PC version. Apparently, Japanese get trade bonuses for building cities on the coast. Egyptians get them for building in the desert. On a console, they feel they can more stereotype? I don't know.
Well, they don't have to be so aware of having to make the game perfectly balanced for multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
They would like to make those bonuses that we have in normal Civ 4 stronger, but it would throw multiplayer so far out of whack that no one would like it.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're free to just go whatever they want to do.
Some of the stuff that we're doing now that we could never do before because of the power of these units and the fact that we know what the hardware is. It's not like PCs where we have to say, like, oh, well, you know, some of our fans have machines that are 3 years old. You know, how do we make them see the game? Well, with the 360 and the PS3, we know that they have a certain level of hardware that we can play to.
I wasn't thinking about the multiplayer aspect. Surprise! But I was even thinking that might tie even in part to the fact, as far as the pacing, trying to crunch it down, for the bonuses were more extreme, you might be able to do more and more quickly.
Mm. There's a lot of interesting different things to be used in the PC version, and I guess we can see how successful they are in the console version. See how they work, see if they work. Who knows, it might end up being a good thing for both the console version and the PC version of Civ.
game of the week that Sid came up with. Before, like, if you're playing chess, then you know who the number one player is, because chess is this easily, you know, 64 squares, 16 pieces on a side, it's always the same. Sid, with random maps and all that stuff, it's not always the same. But the game of the week, you can pull down a unique game every week. You play it single player, you can play it as many times as you want, any way you want. Figure out the map, figure out your best strategy, post your best score, and then see on a leaderboard for that week how you rank against the best Sim players in the world. For once, it's an apples-to-apples comparison of how good you're doing.
Do you think it'll expand the player base of Civilization IV players? Things some people have suggested. This whole thing is just like a big hook to rope people into the Civilization IV franchise.
There weren't a lot of the kind of strategy games that we make out there. Sid thought, well, that's a shame. You know, we're biased. We think that there should be more for Firaxis strategy games out there on the market.
In one of the articles, I believe it was from E3, and they were talking to Sid, I believe it was on GameSpy, where Sid said that they do not view the audience for Civilization Revolution as the same audience for Civilization IV. They're looking to get those people that play console games and have never picked up Civ because it's on a PC and or because it's quite involved.
I think that's a point there, that you look at Civ, and if you haven't been in it before, it's very intimidating. I mean, there's a lot of stuff involved there. Most of us have played Civ 2, or some of us have even played Civ 3.
Are you baiting Imran there, Ken?
I don't know, Mac. But some of us have played this, so we know about these concepts beforehand. Jumping into it is a bit difficult. I remember when I started playing Civ 2, is the first Civ I played, there's that huge manual. I didn't know what I was doing for the first week or so. I was like, I can build cities? Like, wow.
Games had crummy user interfaces back then and no in-game tutorials, and all those things.
Yeah, that's true. And so, yeah, I didn't know I could use the mouse to move. I mean, it was crazy.
You have a point there.
One of the things we were getting at was that there the tone is definitely lighter. A lot of the dialogue that we've seen with Cleopatra being beaten by Caesar of Rome, who the GameSpot demo person is playing as, when her tank is defeated, she goes, "Oh, most noble Emperor Caesar, you treacherous weasel. I had no use for that tank anyway."
Oh.
I love that line.
You may not realize, but this is exactly how Cleopatra looked in history.
So you're saying Civilization Revolution is very historically accurate.
Incredibly accurate, yeah. Really.
And the interesting thing I think that can apply to a regular Civ game is the little slider they have. You could see how they're likely to respond to it.
They say that there's this little feature where when you mouse over the things you're going to do in diplomacy, they like cower in fear or look happy.
Napoleon. And it's like, what?
Napoleon, who's a lot of fun.
He's a bit of a character, it would seem.
Yeah, well, all the other characters I say are larger than life, but Napoleon's actually a bit smaller than life.
One of the more interesting things that I found was that we have three different types of barbarians, one from cold, temperate, and warm climates, and they will have their own unique look and specific units. Gameplay demo, we saw one of these barbarians, Grey Wolf, who, based on his clothing and where we saw the city placements, I believe he's from the colder temperatures.
It looks very light in terms of just the bright colors and the,
yeah,
I guess,
pastel, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the big barbarian that shows up.
Yeah, I love the barbarian. Beware, Caesar. We barbarians despise your comfortable cities and thirst for knowledge. We live in squalor and filth and will soon destroy your silly civilization.
Are you auditioning for something, Dan?
No. Did anybody catch the responses to that that you give? Stand aside, smelly one.
Oh.
Not exactly. It was blood out the sun, stuff like this.
Now that you put that out there, Ken, if Firaxis uses that, you should ask for some royalties. Royalties.
Yes, because that's worth so much when Dan does it.
You know, I bet one of the things they will probably drop are the great people in this version. That's a pretty complex thing to.
No.
I don't know. They mentioned great people in the IGN.
Yes.
One.
Really? You think they're going to have to?
Yeah, one of the things you can do in Civ Rev is your spy units, so we know spies are in Civ Rev. Spy units can steal great people from other players.
That'd be nice to have him be on the screen.
And in the GameSpot demo from E3, we actually very briefly saw one of the great people on screen. His name is Sargon.
Ah, Sargon the Great.
Great leader. So looks like great people are in.
Much greater than Sargon in the mediocre.
We feel like you're going to not only get into a game quick, but you're going to finish that game, and then you're going to start talking trash, and that's what it's all about.
Also in Civ Rev, the trophy room is present, similar to the throne room, but more animated. And as we've already kind of mentioned about some of the animations, and Barry Cottle also said this on GameSpot, part of their E3 demonstration, that the animators have gone crazy.
They're adding so much style to the game, the way that the characters are developed.
Uh-oh. Do we have women in a harem situation? That's one way to market it. He's in the harem. Hey, that woman kissed that one into that.
That's why girls do not let you know they play games.
Girls who play Civ.
Oh, advisors, last seen in Civilization 2 are back. Woo!
Yay!
Advisors. Civ Rev is getting all the features that everybody's been screaming that they want back in the regular game.
Apparently. Yeah. All the fluff features.
Yeah, fluffy visual features.
Wait, what the fuck?
But don't add any strategy to the game.
But I would like to see Elvis tell me how my people are doing.
Oh, I guarantee Elvis will be their cultural advisor.
Yeah, you know, maybe they figure they need the advisors. PC people don't need the advisors.
Yeah, we've been playing this game for a decade, you know.
The advisors will point to specific areas on the map when they have comments to make about threats or opportunities you're facing.
See, that's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, like,
that is an interesting comment.
Stack of Doom, you know.
That'd be great in Beyond the Sword or Civ 5 or whatever, to have an advisor or something, or have like a little pop-up with a little arrow. You might want to be aware of this.
It's Stack of Doom incoming.
Yes, I can just see the military advisor pointing to the map. See this? This is the Stack of Doom. You are now... And then we get another gesture with the hand.
Nice. This is a Stack of Doom. Then he throws it in a frying pan. This is a Stack of Doom on drugs. Any questions?
Wait, don't you mean a Stack of Doom on catapults?
Oh, yes. I don't know if they're ever going to do this with the PC version, but they talk about the Roman legions will acquire helmets when they get the veteran status, and then their cloaks, if they get infiltration, their cloaks turn black, and they'll be called ninja legions.
Yeah, they imply that they've got promotions in this Civilization style.
They do, yeah. And apparently when they get elite status, they have a specific name from one of the elite units in history.
So they get a number.
Yeah.
Oh, there's the nuke launching right now.
Awesome.
Very, very cool.
Awesome.
There's a view of the map for you, and a view of carnage.
Oh.
Sid actually put that death animation in.
Caravans appear to be back.
Caravans! Woohoo!
When your gold reserves are over 100, a caravan unit appears, and it says that the next economic milestone occurs when we have over 250 gold.
Ooh.
One of the interesting things also in one of the GameSpy articles is they mentioned Seven Cities of Gold. Has anyone ever played Seven Cities of Gold?
No. What is Seven Cities of Gold?
Seven Cities of Gold was released more than 20 years ago. You are trying to settle the new world, and there's interaction with native peoples. One of the things you actually discover is the Seven Cities of Gold in Civilization Revolution. So when I saw it was mentioned in this article about the Seven Cities of Gold, I thought, I wonder when we're going to see that. And sure enough, in the first demonstration, we get a message from the culture advisor that you've discovered the Seven Cities of Gold, the remains of a fabulously wealthy civilization, including precious artifact worth 150 gold pieces.
Ooh.
150 gold pieces for an entire city of gold? I get that from a...
Easy, Ken. Easy.
Maybe not in Civ Revolution. Maybe gold is harder to come by.
Mm. Everybody with a gameplay demo on GameSpot, I think the gameplay pace was, just in case anyone was worried, was a little accelerated for the purposes of demonstration. Because in like 30...
That's really
like 3,200, we got catapults in 1900. People are pulling out their tanks and battleships and modern and infantries. I'm like, what the...
It seems like Free Settler mode all over again.
Although I do see that in 1500 BC, when threatening the player, Cleopatra's still wielding a knife. Oh, but anyway.
You know.
Yeah, well.
Can't you get a gun?
Cleopatra's got a gun. Cleopatra. What? Wonders are definitely in. We see the Great Pyramid built, where your temples are now 50% more effective. We assume that that's temples for your entire empire, but we don't know.
They now with 50% more religion. And they have fun little graphical things as well. Some really big-looking scientists. He's like, look in the sky!
Lucy in the sky with Doc.
Mackie in the sky. What?
If you pause at the appropriate points in the video, you can glean what some of the technologies will gain you. And even the dialogue of the science advisor is quite good, although perhaps reveals more about their personal life than we want to know. For example, the science advisor apparently really wants bronze working because he goes, "Ah, bronze working, I want it so bad."
Do you really want it? What would you do for it?
With bronze working, build phalanx and barracks. Plus, you can harvest fish.
I like bronze working,
apparently. Spears. There you go. That could change between now and the final version, but there's what we've got at the moment. And also, we find out about ceremonial burial. You can build a temple and an oracle and something else, but the GameSpot person moused over it too quickly for me to be able to catch that. When your cities can now utilize fish, that's worth plus two food. Did anyone notice that the military advisor and the foreign advisor had a striking resemblance? I guess the foreign advisor hasn't been hired yet. Victory conditions, military conquest, where the space race focuses more on building a large ship to maximize your victory points than getting to Alpha Centauri like in Beyond the Sword. And this is interesting, the culture of victory is based on converting enemy cities and gaining a huge roster of great people.
It's not to accumulate giant pile of culture points in one or two particular cities. It's actually flipping instead.
Did anybody see the base ship view from the demo? That looks freaking sweet.
No.
Where it pans across the screen and you see it going by and then...
Okay, I admit I did see the demo.
That looks awesome.
Woohoo! You remember that time where we saw the spaceship going across the screen? Yeah, that was awesome.
Revcast.
Hey, at least we won't be talking about Beyond the Sword all the time. Like someone
new god.
Oh, guess what our next thing is?
Beyond the Sword!
Oh, no, that's
not other scenarios in Beyond the Sword topic. The scenarios in this IGN preview are Afterworld, Broken Star, Fall from Heaven, Age of Ice, Final Frontier, and Next War. And this Afterworld is probably the most interesting one, somewhat of a tactical game that made it into like some sort of UFO defense type of thing.
There is one thing about Afterworld. Did anyone pick up how many units you have in total?
5.
Wow.
I'm going to be so toast when I play.
Why can't I build any cities? You know someone's going to post that on the forums within the first day. Afterworld is broken. I can't build any cities. There's Broken Star, which is a Russian civil war in 2010, with 8 playable factions and a vast number of rebel states, which is very interesting here. Late game units and different level of upgrades that you can use. And there's 8 unarmed nuclear bombs on the map, each guarded by a coalition of U.S. and European Union forces, and you can gain control of them by destroying them. And then once you have it for 25 turns, you can unlock the arming codes and activate the nuke. Which is a very interesting concept, I think.
Yeah, because finally in this IGN article, we find out what the winning condition for this scenario is. And some of the background, which we hadn't really heard much at all about.
Also, the interesting thing is, you're free to destroy any city on the map. Literate any city. Then there's Fall from Heaven, Age of Ice.
Which we previously discussed.
Yes, in a prior podcast, which I have not yet listened to. Final Frontier, which we have discussed, but is also probably the most anticipated scenario, I think, of the whole. Trying to make it
demo.
Into...
It's the demo. I haven't downloaded it yet.
The demo came out finally?
Yeah.
It's like a move 4.
Doesn't suck.
Yeah, that's the good part.
Sorry. Thinking a lot again.
Also snack 1.5.
Mm-hmm. Might be interesting with the event thing they've added on. Final Frontier might be a very interesting scenario, and you could have an event that a supernova happened on one of your stars or something interesting like that.
Meteor showers.
Meteor showers. Well, it's good. They've been stinky for far too long.
Well, your planet falls into a...
Black hole,
a non-causality flaw in the fabric of the space-time continuum.
Oh, and then you have Next War, which is basically taking future tech and making it into specific technologies and cooling your units and buildings to go with it. I guess it's a futuristic late-game type of thing, probably better done than CTPs. What?
Water?
I guess just very briefly, finally, in the news, Bolton is now on Settler 4.
Yeah, after it almost died. I admit it, I cried.
Yeah, we were pretty unstable there for a few days. People were, like, telling me on my Moxie game, it's like, hey, your Polygon is down. Is it down for you? And I'm like, yeah, it's down for me. And it's like,
and
okay.
Jaguar was asking me if I had brought it down.
Is it still down, guys? Yeah, it's down. You know? And it's like, I just didn't even bother trying for a few days there. And it's like, oh, hey, it started to work again. It's like, okay, I'm back.
Yeah, so now we're on the Settler 4. We really wanted to stay on Settler 3 until Settler 4 was completely set up with some new infrastructure, but that wasn't possible.
We were forced our hands.
But Settler 3 had been very good to us. It had lasted longer than Settler 1, which died a few days short of its birthday, for those who may remember. Settler 2 was a couple of years old.
No humming.
Oh, are you not doing taps?
Actually, Settler 2 was the only one that allowed a smooth transition, because Settler 1 was completely done, and Settler 3 went wonky. That's a technical term. Didn't you know that? And so now we're on Settler 4. We still got 2 gigs of RAM. We now have a dual-core 2.4 gigahertz processor. We now have two 250 gigabyte hard drives.
Hey.
So a good half terabyte.
Yes. Before we had 270 gigabyte hard drives, and our hard drive is now grade 1 controlled.
Great, nice. That
provides us some additional security in case something happens to one of those drives.
So how much does rig cost you?
Actually, they have to do some favors to get the rig. Dan can't talk about it.
Actually,
except for the hard drives, that's not much different from the machine I have.
No, actually, in terms of monthly cost, it is, without giving out specific numbers, it's only about 20% more expensive than Settler 3. It's affordable.
Yeah, okay.
News, email news at abolton.net, or send a private message to Dan Q, Locutus, Snoopy369, Alexander I, or Luminatus via Bolton's forums at abolton.net/forums. Welcome to the Modcast, where we talk about hot issues in the forums.
The Modcast time?
Yep.
Yay, no more goody huts. What the hell is that about? Oh, okay. I don't believe in these so-called goody huts. There's obviously a myth perpetuated by anti-Sinfield trick newbies and sending all their scouts to find them. All right, what the f*** is...
Someone's obviously got the no goody hut option turned on.
Yeah, check your options, people.
I was going to say maybe it was really late at night, but it was in the middle of the afternoon, so maybe he got started drinking early or something.
Maybe he never sent the scouts out early enough, and like they're all taken up by the AI. You know, you do have to send a guy out before 50 tones passes by if you want to get any of those suckers, you know.
Why in the world is this a Modcast topic?
We have to have some lighthearted discussions on this show. We're so serious all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I know. I'm seriously hating you right now.
So, just to confirm, people, there really are goody huts.
Ooh, yeah.
And Santa Claus exists, too.
Thread was started by the D-Man. No, that's not my double login, okay? Jeepers.
The D-Man.
There's this user, Hecabus, who shows a screenshot of a scout popping a settler in the very first turn before he's ever settled his first city. I think he's playing on a pretty easy level.
Yeah, those are only accessible on, what level, noble or below, I think? Because it's actually kind of odd that the quantities and ratios of things you will get from goody huts are largely dependent upon the level you play on. At the highest level, you've got something like 40% chance of getting barbarians if you're popping without using a settler, whereas on the lowest difficulty levels, it's like 1 in 10. So very safe on low difficulty levels, very dangerous on high levels.
You mean popping without a scout?
Yeah. With a scout, you're obviously going to not get barbarians.
Stupid barbarians.
Carnage04 says that when I hear that people have gotten astronomy from these things, I just crack up laughing. You enter an ancient village, the elder attempts to communicate with you in his long-forgotten dialect. He takes you out behind their tents and campfire and shows you his his reflecting telescope.
That's what they call it these days.
There is a limit on what the highest technology you can pop from a goody hut is.
It is astronomy.
Possible, especially if you're playing on a map where you have multiple continents and then it's dotted with some small islands. I remember finding a goody hut still in the 1900 AD. So I think it's very possible to get a later game or a mid-game or whatever, however late you can go, as Mackie and Ken were saying, to get if the goody hut is isolated somewhere that it might take you or some other player a while to get to.
The highest I had ever got was like an ancient level technology.
Mm.
I had never even gotten anything past iron working, I thought.
So you're saying you like getting high?
This one person, this Volfan 37132, said it's fun, but it's not realistic to have goody huts. Whereas Bradless points out, and I agree, history is full of examples of large cultures coming upon smaller ones and benefiting in some way from the experience. For example, at a certain point in time, European settlers exploring somewhere, if they hadn't come across some native peoples to help them out survive, say, some harsh winters, there might not be. I mean, come on now, what kind of statement is that? We're almost touching upon the realistic versus fun aspect, but in this case, it's both fun and realistic. So this D-man needs a reality check because goody huts are here to stay. Deal with it.
It's funatistic.
I think we can all agree that whatever level you're playing at, when you get a map from a goody hut, you go...
Unless the map reveals another goody hut, in which case you go beeline for that, in which case it reveals another map, and then you say... And especially if the map is of the ocean, it's a big spot of ocean there. That's really useful.
This happens to Rod in multiplayer all the time. Every time when I've played with him, he keeps getting maps. And he's sitting there talking to the chat going, ah, blah, blah, not a freaking map.
Whoa.
What was that?
Okay, Mackie.
Can you do that again?
I'm trying not to use curse words.
Go to your happy place.
Girls who play Sims.
That's our happy place.
There's something wrong with this polycast.
What, more than usual?
There's something wrong with every polycast. Our next topic is, how do you feel about attack, defense, and balance in Civ 4? Is it too easy for the attacker? A little too easy to take cities? Basically fair? A little easy to defend cities, or too easy for the defender? The interesting thing is how the split is. It doesn't seem to be much of a consensus. I guess it's almost balanced between how many people think it's easy for the attacker and easy for the defender. The highest level, but not by much, is basically fair.
And that's where I find myself, is basically fair.
Yeah, overall the game's pretty well balanced. I personally don't attack unless I've got a reasonably good advantage in both technology and mass, a larger empire than my opponents.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm probably coming at it from an unfair angle there, that I'm waiting until I can pretty much dogpile easily.
Exactly. As Null Space was noting, and I agree with this as well, as far as the basically fair goes, when you're the attacker, you have quite a few inherent advantages. Like in saying, you're going to attack when you leave, you're in a reasonable position that you're going to be able to do some damage. The attacker is going to choose when he's going to attack. The attacker can choose where to attack and hit the defender where he's weakest.
And it's sort of a snowball effect. Once you get that few extra cities, you start building things faster, you start researching faster, you start being able to attack faster, and then the next thing you know, you own the whole world.
Yep. Unless the AI start trading them amongst each other.
We can't have that.
Well, then, you know.
We must prevent that.
They embargo you. And even Mansa Musa won't trade with you.
That happens.
What's that? Monkey doesn't want to trade. Oh, yeah, well, what else is new?
His version of trading is, I demand your highest technology, and I will give you nothing in return.
There was one person who was saying that it was too easy for the attacker, because he argues that pillaging is far too effective, and large-scale pillaging effectively brings research to a halt, despite the fact that it was the city and not the surrounding area in real life that contained all of the scientists, engineers, etc., especially in the earlier times. Well, first of all, again, this whole realism versus fun aspect.
Come on, think of the Siege of Athens by Sparta. They were able to go in there, burn the fields and all that stuff. They couldn't get in the city walls, but basically they were doing a lockdown pillage of Athens, and it started a plague in the city that killed all of the philosophers. So there.
Yeah, and for the part is about the pillaging being too far effective, early civilization warfare is not always necessarily about taking cities. It's about pillaging. I mean, you can do that in the later game, too. But towards the later game, city-taking becomes easier, generally speaking, as it should be. You've had a chance to build up your defenses. You've had a chance to build up your armies. You have more cities. You're farther on in technology. You have factories, etc., etc.
Yeah. Now, at that point, though, in real warfare, it becomes controlling the territory. Controlling everything afterwards, it becomes the difficult part, which isn't that well reflected in civilization.
But that's, again, fun in the gameplay versus realism.
Yeah, I'm just saying it gives a better advantage to the attackers, because you can take the cities easily at that point, and then it's, okay, they're yours for the rest of the game, pretty much, at that point.
One person, Defiant 47, says, siege weapons, read collateral damage, makes everything fair. Defenders get a load of unfair bonuses. Attackers take them down with collateral damage. Well, I don't think that siege weapons makes everything fair with collateral damage or otherwise, but it does make it more fair. But I disagree completely that these bonuses are unfair. As one other user notes, this Lance of Lawnley, defenders knew much better the lay of the land than, arguably speaking, even today, technology notwithstanding, and you could thus neutralize the attacker's advantage or even take that advantage for yourself.
Yeah, any defensive position is going to be costly to attack. That's just the obvious necessities of any kind of military campaign. There are going to be fortifications. There are going to be things where you have to run up the damn hill and get shot at, you know, just in order to take the fort.
Well, with the single player, I think R.E. Ramin, when he says the attack defense model is just fine, it's how the AI uses it. I think it's important to say that with Beyond the Sword just coming out, some of these considerations and points and arguments that have been put forth might change. So this may be something to revisit in the months ahead as the expansion becomes more widely available and played.
Yeah, probably will be a change in opinion from what they've done with siege weapons. I can hardly imagine people's opinion not changing at all.
You could summarize this. I think it's basically fair.
Yeah, basically, I'd see.
Imran?
Sure, why not? Okay.
So, civilization, are you interested in its history? Are you interested in it or not?
I think I am.
I am also interested in history.
I think everyone who plays Civ is interested in history. It's the reason they were drawn to the game in the first place. I think that generally Civ players are probably a little bit more interested or knowledgeable about history than a general game player. Otherwise, the general game player would have bought Civ.
Fairly. I think people who are interested in turn-based strategy games go to Civ because it's a highly respected turn-based strategy game. And then I think that people who are themselves interested in turn-based strategy games tend to be far more intelligent and elite gamers than people who want to play first-person shooters, and thus they also are interested in history.
Imran,
I don't know about that one.
I've got to say, it's going to rock both of your worlds. I think you're both right.
Yeah! Co-champion! I'll cover for that. So, do you want to elaborate?
If you already have a general interest in history, you come across Civ, you're going to recognize it as being about history. And we're not getting into the whole discussion about how realistic is it about history. We've talked about that before. But it is about history. So you're likely going to pick it up. At the same time, as Ken was saying, if you are interested in strategy games in general or gaming in general, you're looking at new titles coming out, you're looking for a challenge, something a little epic, you will pick up Civilization because perhaps you like the military model. Oh, here's a chance to conquer the world. And then once you get into the game, you might find all the other aspects just as, if not more interesting, than the reason why you picked up the game in the first place. Also, we talked about in a previous polycast about the Civ 3 mod for Canada and the history of Canada. And this version of Civ 3 is going to be, to some students, they're going to be subjected to this, whether they like to or not. And they may find out in the course of playing Civ that they find history or learning about history more enjoyable than they did before they played Civ.
No, as soon as it becomes homework, they'll hate it.
Let's move on to the Senate.
Welcome to the Senate. In this section, we talk about game strategy.
What do you build first? Which has been a question that's been asked in many different ways or many different threads since Civ 4 actually came out.
Actually, I think that's a question that's been asked ever since Civ came out, but that's okay.
Yeah. Oh, whatever.
Last few things on the list are completely off, unless you're trying for, well, maybe a monument.
Unless you're trying to lose.
Yeah. Monument might be worth it if you were trying to do a cultural victory. But barracks that early, no. First thing you build, no.
No, you build either a worker or a warrior. Not a settler, though. That's even more.
No, settler. No. Worker.
That's even more stupid. Scout, maybe.
Scout may be on a multiplayer map so you can get to the goody huts before the other guys. But
perhaps. But that depends, of course. 52% say worker. 30% say warrior. Depends if you're playing Raging Barbarians or something like that, too.
99% of the time I build a worker, and very, very rarely would I build anything else. Maybe a fishing boat if I'm right next to a fish, and I start with fishing.
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to disagree. Yes, so who was it that said that on CFC that they wanted us to disagree more? Here you go.
I disagree, Dan. I disagree that we are disagreeing more.
I disagree with both of you.
And Mackie agrees with all of us about disagreeing.
How's that for cognitive distance?
See, that is not a visual meeting. You can see me doing the head desk thing.
Girl's playing soon.
Oh, boy. As Imran already pointed out, no way that you would build a settler, first of all. But for a similar reason, I wouldn't build a worker first, which is because it's going to stall my city growth. Generally speaking, I'm going to start with either a warrior or a scout. Although if I'm playing with barbarians on, I'll probably go with a warrior to start. But you know...
That's why you're still playing on settler.
Pre-settler.
Losing 10 turns of growth at the first of the game is not a big thing because you make it up really quickly. Having the worker 10 turns earlier to start all your improvements 10 turns earlier adds up a lot.
Well, yeah. I guess it would depend on what technologies you have to start with or you're about to get.
You'll always be able to research something in the time it takes to build the worker to be able to have the worker do something immediately useful.
If I'm going to go for a scout or worker as the second thing I build, if I have hunting to start with and I have no valuable resource in my city or cultural border otherwise that I think I'm going to take advantage of or I'm stuck on an island, I'll build a scout next. Same hammer cost as a warrior, but scout is speedy. And as we already mentioned in a modcast topic, get you going on those goody huts. If they exist, of course, because some people say they don't.
They may not.
Goody huts.
How do you make a great person in your games? The poll options are creation of a great wonder, or taking city population away from working the land and turning them into specialists, or both. Oh, there is also what's GP? The overwhelming is 61% said both.
Yeah.
I normally forget to take my city population away and turning them into specialists, so I'm more in the creation of a great wonder thing.
Yeah, I am a big wonder whore, so I will try to get 4 or 5 wonders pretty soon, and then supplement that with 1 or 2 specialists and some civic options like pacifism if I can get it. And, of course, national epic. And I concentrate all my great people points in that one city. It was a combination of actually 3 things. Wonders, specialists, and civics.
I put myself under the both category.
Me 3.
Now, the response I like the most in the thread...
Dobby man?
No, it's like...
Oh, damn it. I like that one.
Down
one
there, when a daddy great people put... When a great
oh, person, that's Dobby man. That's
great
the
great person, me. Very much.
That's a Dobby man. That's the one I saw.
So Ken now disagreeing to agree with Imran. Oh.
I know. Really. I'm hurt. Moving on.
Ken, you mentioned about concentrating on wonders. When you're going for great people, which great person are you generally going to go for most of the time? Well, I know that depends a lot on circumstances in the game, but...
For me, because of the mix I've got from the wonders, I'm always running at least one engineer, just to give a chance of getting those guys. And the wonders are kind of whatever I can grab. There's almost always some great profit-producing wonders in there, since those predominate in the early part of the game. So I end up with, like, heterogeneous mix there, and I can have very little control over the guys, which is something I probably want the mod to fix that.
Yes. Great profits. They come onto the scene in a big way, and then they whimper.
Yeah. They need some new special abilities.
No, you see, and what we need is a general mod for the game that we find in one of those Beyond the Sword scenarios. They're one of the scenarios where the great prophets can bring about those disasters on other civs.
Mm, It's a little cheesy. I was thinking of two things, like a super missionary effect where you hit another civilization with them, and it's like hitting every one of their cities with a missionary. And you could use them on yourself, too, to spread your own religion if you wanted. And maybe some kind of a crusade where they immediately move all of your war weariness with everyone.
And what kind of cheese would that be, anyway? Cheddar, old, what? You got something in mind?
Brie, camembert, feta, parmesan.
Call in today.
In North America, the number is 301-637-659, 301-637-PAULING.
And for Europe, 44-020-7871-7659, 44-020-7871-PAULY.
Or you can Skype us at the Polycast.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Log on to the official Polycast website at polycast.apolton.net. In the workshop, we play with Creative Game Works.
Okay, shameless plug time.
Shameless plug! Woo!
What I've been doing over the last year or so is to assemble a whole bunch of modifications by other people, assemble them into a package where anyone can use it. It's optional. All of the modifications are off by default. Most of them are in XML tags that look just like regular ones. And then everyone can take this and build on top of it to create their own mod that's customized just by adding the necessary XML files to it. Over the last month, I've taken the access I had with Beyond the Sword and compiled a Beyond the Sword version, which is just about the largest modification I've ever done. It's got something on the order of 50 new mods in it.
Wow.
It's going to be coming out pretty soon. It'll be out there by the time this hits the audience, and I hopefully will have it being used by a lot of the other big mod packs out there. Unfortunately, it'll probably be a little buggy at first, but bear with me, and it will become a nice, stable mod. And it's called the CCCP, which stands for...
Soviet Russia, aim mods you.
It started off really early on in the Civilization IV, actually in vanilla. Didn't really go anywhere, but now it's starting to finally pick up steam.
Apparently the sound quality was great, Hugod said. And apparently we have a similar thread on CFC on our episodes. Since episode 18, apparently Dan has been putting them on CFC for the unwashed masses to read.
Great, Imran. Wait till
this message from there. All hate mail.
I think my favorite quote was from the user So, that's with five letter O's. I like the mix of personalities. It's not exactly a place you go for a top quality strategy, but still it keeps me amused.
I don't think we've ever claimed to be top quality strategy.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Apparently Pimpy McPimp still subscribed. I like that, because how the hell did you ever start doing this crap?
I was about to say
I'm paraphrasing, but...
Well, Dan's yeah. Just a PM, and we're stupid enough to answer it.
Yes, that's probably true. Do you want to do a pod? A what? Alright, whatever. Crap.
But as Pimpy McPimp responded, there is a podcast for everything now.
Girls Who Play Civ.
Alright, everyone, let's talk about playing Civ.
I was just typing up a post, and I don't know if any of you could hear it.
Yes, we heard.
Yes.
No one mentioned anything.
We were being polite.
We should just start to ignore you when you do that, Imran, so...
Oh, I was trying... Oh.
So did we announce the winner of the poll?
This is Civ 4 Beyond the Sword 07. Yes, we did.
And the winner is...
I vote for Mackie.
Well, isn't it to wear a crown and get dressed up and all that?
What's that? You'd rather not get dressed at all? Well, then.
Hey, now.
Thank you for listening to the 21st episode of Polycast, the official podcast of the Bolton Civilization site. We've been joined by our returning guest co-host, Impaler WRG.
Yay!
That was actually the opportunity for Ken to respond, not you, Imran. Unless you've changed your name. Well, because you've changed your voice, I figured you might be going changing your name, too.
Hello, Dan.
We've also been joined by Imran.
Hey! Yeah, that's me.
And Mackie, with all her girl parts.
No, she leaves those at home.
Yay. Running away, running very far away.
Record date July 21st, 2007. Soundtrack courtesy Civilization IV and its Warlords and Beyond the Sword expansion packs. Civilization Revolution play demo clips, copyright CNET Networks. Copyright 2007, Appleton Civilization site at appleton.net.